It is Sunday evening, July 19th. The news cycle doesn't take a day off, and neither does the friction inherent in the systems we rely on. Here is what you need to know to start your week with a clear head. A conversation making the rounds this week on founder psychology suggests that founders who refuse to stop doing the grunt work are killing their own companies. It's a simple bottleneck. When a CEO insists on approving every single decision, they turn themselves into a wall that no one can climb over. This forces the team to wait for permission, which kills their ability to learn how to do the job on their own. The founder stays trapped in the engine room, and the company stays small. It is a psychological trap, honestly. You think you are being diligent by keeping your hands on the wheel, but you are actually just making sure the car never leaves the driveway. Look, scaling is not about working harder. It is about a harsh audit of your own calendar. If you are still doing 80% of the tasks you were doing when you started, you are the problem. The goal is to move from being a tactical operator to a strategic architect. You have to replace yourself with systems. If you can't make yourself obsolete in the daily flow, you've effectively put a hard cap on your revenue. It is a shitty way to run a business, but it happens everywhere. Sometimes, though, the problem isn't a stubborn boss. It's the fact that reality is just messy. Take the immortal jellyfish, Turritopsis doryneae, that's Turritopsis doryneae. It is theoretically immortal because it can revert to a juvenile state, but it's so fragile that the slightest change in lab water flow kills it. The system is optimized for a perfect, theoretical outcome that the real world just won't support. We see this in social systems, too. When the public gets to vote on things like naming bridges, you get internet trolls hijacking the process. The intent to honor a local industry gets drowned out by noise the second you open the door to unverified participation. Then there is the matter of what happens when the systems we rely on just plain stop working. Whether it is a bus driver acting erratically, a power grid failing in Cuba, or a random person losing their mind on a plane, people end up in a state of trapped agency. You try to use social norms to restore order, but the system is already broken. You can't appeal to authority when the authority isn't there. People usually end up in one of two states. They either become hypervigilant or they completely detach to stay sane. It is adaptive suffering. You stop trying to fix the power grid and start focusing on your rechargeable fan, because that is the only thing you can actually control. That desire for control shows up in weird places. When people feel like they have no say in their own lives, they start projecting that energy onto symbols. Take the Sycamore Gap tree in England. When it was cut down, the public reaction was massive. The legal system tried to treat it like a major crime, which is just a way of imposing order on a situation that feels nonsensical. We want to believe that if we can just punish someone, the world makes sense again. But the world is often just random, which is a hell of a thing to admit. We are seeing this play out on a national scale, too. The current administration is systematically bypassing institutional checks to consolidate power. They are shifting election oversight from state-led systems to executive mandates, which lets them delegitimize any result they don't like before the votes are even counted. They're using agencies like ICE, pronounced ICE, as tools of coercive force, regardless of the internal investigations into their conduct. They are even suggesting strikes on civilian infrastructure in Iran. That is not just policy. That is a move toward a perpetual state of conflict, which, coincidentally, looks great for military contractors. It all ties together. Whether it is a founder who can't let go of the keys, a lab experiment that disintegrates under pressure, or a government that decides institutions are just obstacles to be cleared, the failure is the same. We love to build systems that work on paper. We love the theory of control. But when environmental friction hits, or when someone decides the rules don't apply, those systems shatter. The most rational response isn't always to fight for control. Sometimes, it's just acknowledging that the machine is broken, and finding a way to keep your own head while the rest of it drifts. That kind of bottleneck isn't limited to the boardroom. It's a creative problem, too. Look at how one director is trying to outrun the machine. Christopher Nolan is filming a new adaptation of The Odyssey. He is rejecting digital effects in favor of physical production. He is using IMAX cameras, pronounced IMAX, which limit film takes to under 3 minutes. This technical constraint is forcing actors to maintain emotional intensity during frequent reloads. It is a hell of a way to work. By choosing physical puppets over CGI for creatures like the Cyclops, Nolan is aiming to ground ancient myths in tangible, modern reality. He is also linking the moral weight of his storytelling directly to the consequences of war. He sees his body of work as an iterative, compounding exploration of human choice. The lesson here is simple. If you want to make something that actually lasts, stop trying to make it easy. Nolan is using these constraints to force a higher level of focus. It is the opposite of the current trend to automate, smooth out, and digitize every edge of a project. Speaking of edges, businesses are currently trying to escape the commoditization trap. The strategy is to move away from selling generic outcomes. Instead, firms are packaging their expertise into proprietary, named frameworks. This makes their service a unique mechanism rather than a market commodity. It is a smart move. When you sell a branded system, you stop being a price taker. You stop getting cross-shopped against the cheapest competitor in the sector. You are no longer selling a commodity, but an exclusive, intellectual asset. But there is a real cost to this kind of autonomy. Take Modern Media. They are a small, independent production outfit that recently made headlines for promoting a Christmas single, Christmas Lights Asterisk, in the middle of July. They are doing this entirely without institutional gatekeepers like publicists or big marketing firms. They are skipping the middleman to keep their brand authentic, but they are paying for that freedom with a massive amount of administrative friction. The creator has to manually pitch radio programmers and playlist curators who naturally view independent submissions as spam. They are essentially trading the cost of a publicist for the daily exhaustion of proving their own legitimacy. It is a high-velocity, low-tinkering philosophy. They even delete their source files after a release to prevent the urge to endlessly refine the work. That is a brutal constraint. It forces them to ship and move on, which protects against the temptation to polish the life out of a project. This brings us to the tension between convenience and mastery. Ryan Hawke, who runs a business without long-term contracts, calls it productive paranoia. Because he has no guaranteed revenue, he is forced to provide massive value in every single session. The anxiety of potentially losing clients is his engine for innovation. He warns that tools like AI, pronounced AI, come with a hidden tax. If you outsource your thinking, you suffer from cognitive atrophy. You lose the neural development that only comes from the creative struggle itself. You might get the work done faster, but you are not building the internal capacity to produce value in the future. We are seeing a clear divide here. On one side, you have the Nolan and Modern approach. They are leaning into physical constraints and self-imposed friction to build something durable. They are making things that feel heavy because they are. On the other side, you have the pressure to automate and dabble in everything. The market wants you to be efficient. It wants you to use every shortcut to minimize your effort. But efficiency is the enemy of a moat. If you can do it easily, someone else can do it cheaper. The common thread is commitment. Whether it is Nolan blocking his own path with massive cameras or a consultant refusing to sign long-term deals to keep their edge sharp, the goal is the same. They are all engineering their own difficulty. They are choosing the hard way because it is the only way to become uncommoditized. It is not about working harder for the sake of it. It is about building a system that is too specific, too personal, and too difficult for the market to replicate. That is how you stop being a line item on a spreadsheet and start being an asset, which, honestly, is the only place worth being. The obsession with building something that lasts is an antidote to the churn. But sometimes, even the most intentional systems run into a wall of changing culture. As of this afternoon, the 2026 FIFA World Cup final is underway, with Spain and Argentina competing for the title. This match marks the end of the Messi-Ronaldo era in international soccer. A new generation of stars has arrived, led by Lamine Yamal, pronounced L-A-H mean Y-M-A-H-L. The tournament, while successful in embedding soccer culture into the American mainstream, faced significant logistical friction. Media and fans struggled with 90-minute wait times caused by the heavy security presence required for high-ranking political officials. It is a hell of a thing to see a global event get choked by its own logistics. The organizers clearly prioritized political attendance over the actual fan experience. That is a shitty way to run a tournament, especially when you are trying to cement a sport in a new market. If they want to keep hosting, they need to figure out how to decentralize, or they will keep paying a friction tax that nobody actually wants to cover. Meanwhile, the fitness industry is ditching the bodybuilding basement for the boardroom. Physical optimization, including hormone therapy and data-driven analysis, is becoming a standard requirement for high-level professional efficiency. High-net-worth individuals and tech CEOs now view rigorous physical protocols as a core business asset. This shift has turned what used to be a niche subculture into a year-round digital ecosystem for media and commerce. There is a clear link here between these two worlds. We are seeing a total collapse of the wall between personal performance and professional output. Whether it is an athlete like Yamal building a global brand or a CEO using blood work to optimize their productivity, the goal is the same. It is all about managing oneself like a high-performance system. The days of treating health as an extracurricular activity are over. The irony is that both of these fields are selling the same promise of total control. In soccer, you have a young star like Yamal who is being positioned to replace the old guard through carefully managed partnerships. That is not just talent. That is a disciplined, brand-led strategy that mirrors the rigor of a contest prep in bodybuilding. People are no longer just playing a game or going to the gym. They are building a self-contained, scalable asset. The danger, obviously, is when this mindset meets the real world. We saw it at the World Cup, where the drive for high-level, high-security perfection created a massive mess for everyone else. When you treat everything like an optimized system, you tend to forget that systems need to actually function for the people inside them. Anyway, the model is shifting. We are moving away from the era of the singular icon who just shows up and wins. Everything is becoming a data-driven, branded, and highly disciplined operation. It is efficient for sure, but it is also a bit exhausting to watch. If you are not optimizing your health, your brand, or your output, you are apparently falling behind, which honestly sounds like a lot of work just to exist. That shift toward total optimization is changing how we define success, and it's changing how our public institutions function, too. Fire departments across the United States are changing, and it has nothing to do with fighting fires. According to industry data, while fire incidents have dropped by nearly 60% over the last three decades, the number of salaried firefighters has increased by 54%. The reason is simple. Fire departments have become the default, high-availability medical response network for the public. Here is the thing about that. The private ambulance market is built on economic constraints that keep vehicles off the road to save money. When a medical emergency happens, those private services are often unavailable. Dispatchers then send a multi-million-dollar fire engine to handle the call because it is the only unit nearby. It is objectively inefficient to use a massive truck for an asthma attack, but it is the only way to ensure a rapid response. The fire service has effectively become a concierge for public safety. Because they maintain a no-denial-of-service policy, they are now the catch, all for everything from minor health issues to animal rescues. This requires keeping staff ready to roll within 60 seconds, 24 hours a day. It is a massive fixed-cost operation, but it is a necessary one. If we want a safety net, we have to pay for the gear and the people to run it. On the other side of the world, military and intelligence institutions are feeling the pressure of a different kind of evolution. Northern Australia is currently hosting Exercise Pitch Black, a military training event involving 20 nations. While the official line is simple cooperation, defense analysts see a clear signal to China. The U.S., Japan, and their partners are demonstrating a unified military posture in the region. This hardening of alliances is happening alongside a shift in how we view geography. The Pine Gap spy base in Australia is a cornerstone of the U.S.-Australia alliance, but it is facing a strange problem. Its value was built on being remote and secure. Now, advanced satellite technology is stripping away that advantage. A base that was once hidden in the desert is becoming a fixed, public-facing asset that creates friction with local landowners. It is a weird paradox. In the United States, we are turning local fire departments into global-style, rapid-response medical infrastructure because the private sector failed. Meanwhile, in the global security space, we are seeing the exact opposite. Expensive, fixed infrastructure like the Pine Gap base is becoming a liability because technology has made the world too small to hide in. Even the way we enforce the law is shifting toward this same kind of consolidation. The legal proceedings involving Andrew and Tristan Tate, which have included coordination between Romanian and U.S. authorities, show that digital borders are effectively gone. Governments are now coordinating across jurisdictions to neutralize influential figures when their online presence leads to real-world criminal consequences. Whether it is a fire truck showing up to a medical call or a multinational military exercise in the Pacific, the trend is clear. Institutions are being forced to compress their reaction times. They are moving away from specialized, isolated roles and toward a more integrated, high-intensity model. It means less room for error. And honestly, a lot less room for the kind of slow, reactive policy that used to be the standard. We are building a world that demands immediate results from everyone, everywhere, all the time. It is a hell of a shift, and I am not entirely sure our systems are as prepared for it as they claim to be. We are seeing that pressure for immediate, data-driven results everywhere. Even in the high-stakes world of corporate valuation, the math is starting to look a little shaky. A few other things worth knowing this evening. Tesla is currently facing criticism regarding its $1.5 trillion valuation. Critics are pointing out that the stock price might be inflated by as much as $1 trillion, arguing that the company has yet to reach the commercial scale or unit economics that typically justify such a valuation. There is a recurring argument in some circles that when people trade personal responsibility for short-term pleasure, they leave a vacuum that eventually invites authoritarian control. The theory is pretty straightforward, if bleak. If you stop regulating your own behavior, you are essentially signaling to the state that you require an external force to keep you in line. Finally, a local perspective on gluttony is reframing the concept away from just overeating and toward a failure of communal stewardship. The idea here is that viewing material goods strictly as things for personal consumption ignores the fact that resources are meant to be shared, not just hoarded for the sake of the individual. Honestly, it is a hell of a take, but the math on community sustainability probably holds up. That is the wrap for tonight. Get some rest, and we will do it all again tomorrow.